Hey, Relay community, it's Lindsay, Peter, and Tommy here.
I'm just trying to mess up the audio.
He's got some bling. He's got some stuff going on.
Bling.
He's the guy that wears the medals to the office the next day. That's you. You're that guy.
I mean, sometimes you feel like you deserve it, you know, so you just do it.
Do you feel like you double deserve it this time, running 2 marathons in 7 days?
I almost feel like I triple deserve it because of this, the race, the 7 days recovery, and then the other race. So I feel like I did 3 crazy feats.
All right, friends. So what we're doing today is we're going to get the rundown from Tommy about his time in Osaka and Tokyo, where he did 2 marathons in 7 days. Both? Was it 3 hours, almost 3 hours flat, both?
Yeah, the first one was 3 hours, 44 seconds, and the second was 3 hours, 1 minute, and 30 seconds.
Okay, and you, like, hammered that last 5K.
Yeah. I can talk about that. I got a little antsy there.
I do first want to kick this off with the best thing about Tommy and going to races with him is he's always going to find the best place to eat. Like, anytime I've been in a marathon setting and Tommy's there and people are going to get food, I'm like, yes, wherever Tommy is going, that's where I want to be. And you have delivered both times in Boston and Orlando. So did you have good experiences in Japan?
So Osaka was tough on the food scene. For vegan, because I'm vegan. So just everybody knows,
yes,
I'm vegan. So I thought that stereotype kicks in. I thought that Japan's gonna be super easy because, of course, you know. But some cultures, I mean, they in Osaka, they put something in everything, you know. So it was a little tough for me in Osaka. One day I had French fries for dinner. That's like kind of an extreme, but I did get French fries. But in Tokyo, it was much different. It was so many different options. I had like some of the best vegan ramen I've had in my life.
Oh my wow. God.
Yum.
Yeah. Even my mom had it too, and she was like, this is probably some of the best ramen I've had in my life, not just vegan ramen. So
we love your mom.
Yeah, we love my mom.
Is it Kathleen?
Yeah, Kathleen. Okay. Yep, Kathleen. So I feel like I may need to stop hanging out with her at these things, because then she starts like stealing my shine. I'm like,
yeah,
you know, I'm like trying to make stories and respond to, you know, questions or whatever in my stories, and she's just like answering them in the background. Like, I'm like, listen, lady,
maybe you can set up a call with her and Gary. Be like, this is how we collaborate.
This is how it works, okay? Yeah. Like, Gary's trying to steal my shine in Orlando. Now she's like going around the world with me, like trying to like slowly take back my power. You know, but.
It reminds me of when, famous people bring their mom to, like, the Grammys or, like, the Academy Awards. They're like, there's Bradley Cooper with his mom, and it's, like, aww, a big deal. Like, oh, there's Tommy Runs in Japan with his mom.
I mean, let's just full disclosure. I mean, yeah, I bring her around because she's my mom and stuff like that, and she wants to be there. But, oh, I know it's a power play. You know, like, I know that I'm like, who... What could, like, have, like, the biggest waves and, like, get the most views? Mom. You know?
Oh, or, playing like, the mom card.
The next best thing above that would be, like, kids. But, like, it would be too expensive to take both of my kids to Japan.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to be in Japan with them for 13 days.
No. So, no, thank
mom's,
you.
Mom's the next best option.
Sorry, Peter. I'm, like, stealing all the interview.
No. I'm just curious about, I want to like an overview. I want to like, remind me again what happened. How long were you in Asia? And then what the lead up to each was?
Okay, so I was in, I left here on like the 20th of February and then came back here on the 4th of March. So I was gone 13 days total. Travel there and back is so strange. Like, you lose a whole day going there, and then on the way back, we took off at 4:30 p.m. on Monday and landed at 2:30 p.m. on Monday. So we literally went back in time. So if anybody wants to know what's up with the future, I'm telling you, it's amazing. But I was there for 13 days. I ran Osaka with Mizuno and their whole team. Like, they had people from all over the world there to kind of showcase their Wave Rebellion Pro 2 shoe that they just dropped. So ran the race in those on the 25th of February. Dedicated that race to my dad, which was amazing. It was like another totally... It's like for a whole nother podcast. And then I went over to Tokyo with Westin, stayed with the Westin Tokyo there, because they're one of the Abbott major sponsors for all six. So,
remind me, this is because Westin really, like, they've staked a claim. They want to be forerunners about runners.
Exactly. So, like, I think they got the sponsorship, or they started the sponsorship like last year. So this is like their second year doing this. So I think like the first few were just, they're trying to figure out like how to work with, you know, runners, and try to figure out how to best serve runners instead of it just being like, come stay with us, you know. So I was really happy that they like contacted, or that I was able to work it out, because I knew I was going to be in Japan anyway. So I was able to talk to them and figure out how it would be best to handle it. And I loved that they kind of let me do my thing, and it wasn't like, hey, we want you to, here's what we want you to cover and showcase. Like, I think that they're genuinely invested in trying to figure out how to be not only a sponsor of the Abbott World Majors, but also be like of assistance and of value to runners that are potentially staying there, or maybe not even staying there, but just want to come and enjoy what they have going on.
Gotcha.
So I got there on Tuesday before the race, and like jumped into recovery, like full steam ahead. Everything that I've ever read about doing for recovery, I did I did in those like 7 days. So that's like, I learned a lot about recovery in that sense. Just like trying to get better within 7 days. And then ran the Tokyo Marathon on the 4th.
What do you feel like made the big difference, or made relatively helpful difference?
I think a lot of things. Like, I think it's interesting what the body can do if you don't go like all out. Just not even trying to like brag or whatever. I just didn't go all out in Osaka for multiple reasons, because like training was weird, and I was worried about my like IT band issue. So like I just kind of like, I didn't want to even push it at all. Like, I, you know, like I wanted to run well. Like, I still have a competitive thing, and I was like let's try to go for 3, you know, and try my best to make that happen. And like halfway through, I'm like, well, maybe this is possible. I'm not like dying yet, you know. But then knowing that that wasn't like 100%. I think that you recover faster than I thought you would, and okay, just with the difference. Because even my mom after Osaka was like, "You don't look like you normally do." Like, we were walking around, we were like going up and down stairs. It's just a little. It was definitely tough, but it was not as bad as if I was like going for a PR or something like that.
I'm curious, that moment. I guess it's not a moment. It's a multi-hour moment where you're like, I mean, 2:59 would be all right. Three flats, okay. Like, it's like, I think this is interesting because we always talk about like, sure, shooting for a PB, shooting for a PR, that's pretty clear. And then the moment you're not, everyone kind of slices that, navigates that journey differently. Like, how did you go about it? Because you're like, I want to push harder, but like, I don't want to push that hard. And I mean, I appreciate, I just have to say, like, you don't bellyache about injury or like, you know. Yeah. It can come off almost vague because you're not like, let me tell you my 30-minute like sob story about how my leg is not performing 100%. But as a result, it sometimes can, you're underselling, like your training had been like, I think a lot of us, maybe I'm speaking also for myself, are navigating journeys where you're like, it's not 100% training. The goals are not 100% clear. And so then I think that journey that you are on is sort of interesting. It's like, so what was it like to be out there for 3 hours taking it all in, but also like, I mean, maybe I want to go faster, maybe I don't.
Yeah, no, I appreciate saying, like, I think that's interesting because I think, like, me and my friends call it, like cop and please, you know? So sometimes, like, if I have a reason to, like, really want to, like, talk about this injury right before the race, you know, is, like, I'll say something and, bro, like, they'll send it and, like, bro, cop and please already? Like, and it's, like, I can't be injured, yo.
Yeah.
But it's, like, so, like, I think that just naturally, I think in the beginning of, like, when I was, like, starting this journey, everything was all about, like, trying to be Q and trying to run faster and get PRs, which is still very important to me. Somewhere in there, like, I realized that, like, that's not even the biggest, that's not what I'm, like, here to doing this all for, which, you know, like, I want to run fast for me, only me, really. Mm-hmm. So throwing in all this extra stuff and talking about all the reasons why something doesn't go right just doesn't really fit what, like, the purpose is right now. So I just try my best to stay away from that and just try to have fun. I'm not going to be irresponsible. Like, so if it was like a real injury, I just wouldn't run.
Gotcha.
I just felt like I could work through it, but it was fun to hear somebody say like, hey, I'm going at 3 hours. Do you want to run with me? I'm like, sure, we'll go after it. So it was like one of those things where like, I felt like it was a push and I did have to work to get there. Like, I'm not saying like, I was just like walking the park, looking around. I knew that with my fitness level and maybe the potential risk or whatever, that 3 hours was going to be a good A goal for the day, you know?
Yeah.
And then if I ran 3:10 and whatever, or 3:20 or whatever, it just is what it is. But so I figured 3 hours would be a good thing to keep me engaged, keep me happy with the race, and then also end it with, as long as I'm not injured, having built on something where maybe like, I gained some fitness that day too, you know, like, so I had to try to play this weird role, weird thing. But then the 3 hours were just like an arbitrary, like, you know, it would be great to be around that, you know, but, you know, thinking that like halfway through or 20 miles in, like if I could just hold this like 6:45, I could maybe make it, and just didn't quite make it there. But with maybe 1 mile left, I was at a point where I was talking to myself a lot, because that was a different race for me for many reasons. But I just told myself like, hey, you know, whatever happens today, like if I ran 3:05, I promised myself that I was just gonna be like super happy with whatever it was, because I was proud that I got that far. Like at 24 miles, I was like, this is a win no matter what. And then likewise too in Tokyo, I felt the same, because I was like, if I could double, you know, 7 days later and run close to the same number, then great. And I'm super happy with it.
You alluded to the race meaning more to you, and that's another podcast for another day, because we're doing a short episode here. But I do want to encourage people to go listen to your episode on my podcast, I'll Have Another, because you do, we recorded for 2 hours.
Two hours.
You talked about
people have heard enough of me and you, Lindsay, for sure.
2 hours and 15 minutes. Actually, though, I will say, if you are one of the people that have reached out to Tommy or I about that episode, thank you, because we've both received quite a bit of feedback, and it sounds like it was a really meaningful conversation to a lot of people. So go back and listen to that if you haven't. But I do want to follow up on that, if we can touch on it just a little bit. Can you share a little bit about, in case anybody hadn't listened to that episode, why this moment and this race was so important to you with your dad and everything?
Okay, I'll try to make it quick. So, I'm 39 years old. My dad passed away when he was 39 in, like, just say, pick a number of days, because he died on the 19th of February. The 25th, based on our birthdays and things, which I've been known about I've known about February 24th for too long, probably. Like, this is the day that he died in comparison to my age. And the 25th would have been the first day that I was older than him. You know, maybe I'm not 40 yet, but just older than him. So it just was convenient and like random that I got this opportunity to be on the other side of the world running a marathon on the first day that I've surpassed the days that he lived this, walked this earth, you know? And it was just super special to have that moment happen and to be doing the exact opposite thing of what he was doing, which is like living my best life and doing something for me and doing something challenging and having fun with it, you know? So like that was just a super special moment and day. My mom was there, so it was cool, and everybody around knew that this was happening. And even Mizuno people like treated me a little like, it felt differently, just because they knew what I was trying to work with. And not to like make this a long podcast, but my mom asked me after, she's like, how do you feel? Like, do you feel, you know? Mm. And, so I was like, well, I honestly feel like I left, and I text Kara Goucher today, or yes, messenger. Like, I feel like I left something in Osaka in like the best way possible, you know? And cause I put so much on this race, like it meant something so much to me, like probably more than people probably like, oh, that seemed like you shouldn't put that much pressure on a race. It was like symbolic for me. And I'm glad that it was a good race. I'm glad that I worked through the little issues I had that day, and it was amazing.
Oh, I love that so much, Tommy. Maybe not too deep. No, not too deep. You, like, what is your message that you take from that? Like, if someone else has this, like, impending date, or, you know, we all have our things that we're like, oh, yeah, when this happens or whatever. Like, what is your message to that person who's, like, in the waiting period?
Yeah, I guess if I was to talk to myself before that day, I would have probably tried to convince myself that, like, you don't have to wait on that day, you know? For some reason, I just needed to do that, but, you know, some people's days are just too far away, you know? Like, if, you know, I wish that I hadn't done it this way, because it's just a lot of grief. You're going to grieve no matter what. Like, I'm not saying, like, all of a sudden now I'm happy, you know, that this happened. It's always going to hurt. But I think I just placed so much like fear on like not making it to that day for so long, like since I was like a teenager, like I'm not gonna make it to that age, you know. But I guess I would just say, like, maybe ask yourself a few more questions about it, like, you know, what would this person really want you to do with this time, you know? Because the answer is never gonna be like be terrified all the way until the day, you know, and hate yourself forever until that day, and then start a new life after you beat it, you know. They're not going to say that. They'd rather you live out as much as possible and do all the things and celebrate it all, you know.
So you feel like you left something there, and now, you know, like after a big experience in your life happens and you're like, okay, what now? You know, not that you were looking forward to that day, but there was like all this buildup in your mind and your emotional and spiritual and physical energy. So like now where do you go from here?
I think I think that's part of the reason why I would have told myself just to not handle it the way I was doing it, just because nothing changes, you know, like luckily and thank God that I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing and working on being like a better person and keep pushing in the direction I'm pushing in and try to keep bringing value to people by telling my story. And if the messaging around this part of my story changes, then great, because the messaging around all of our stories should change eventually. So it's just like, just keep going in the direction you're going. Don't carry so much weight, almost for no reason. And just, oh, then I got to get ready for Boston and London. So, like, that was easy to switch over to. You know, like, next up, you know. But I feel great. I feel happy. So proud of, like, that 13 days. And it was amazing to be able to have my mom there through, like, all of it.
Yeah, it looked incredible from afar. And we appreciated you bringing us along in your stories. I guess I'm curious to, like, have you expand on that, having used marathoning for like this very narrow pursuit and sort of expanding this, as you continue to, you know, we're 5 weeks out from you doing it again. Like where's your head at in terms of, you know, just using marathoning in a new way? Cause I would say, like, objectively, you're still a relatively new runner. You're on this journey of improvement and strength. It doesn't always need to show up, you know, in any one day to be like on a really great journey.
Yeah. I feel like, I'm in a good spot to continue using, you know, running to broaden and, like the range of like, the people I get to share with. And I think that that's super important to me. And that's like the direction I want to stay going. Like I said, like the PR things and stuff like that, that's all just for me. Like I share it because, you know, somebody sharing their PR that's like a 235 or whatever, like that's inspiring to me. And I don't normally feel like people are bragging about. They're just like, hey, this is what I was able to do. Here's my training. And as long as they're honest about that part of the journey and they don't look, you know, they're not like sugarcoating everything or like lying to us, then I feel inspired by it. And so I want to keep going for that reason. But then I also want to, I think people resonate a lot with the way that I handle things, just because like so many of us are just trying to be better at something, you know, and, whether it's running or whatever, you can just name anything. And I'm just going to try to share as much of the journey as possible authentically. And, that's what I'm using marathoning for and running for just in general, is just to keep getting better and sharing that part of it.
Do you feel a little spoiled coming off of being like a VIP throughout Japan? I was like, man, Boston might be a letdown. London could be just like a total disappointment.
Yeah, right. He's in Boston with Adidas.
Oh yeah. I don't know though. That like seems like really Weston set a high bar.
Man, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where I'm. No shade to anybody that's coming up after this. I'm not sure. Like Weston, the hotel in Osaka was great. But the Westin in Tokyo was just like, I mean, it was like next level. Like I'm going to probably joke about it for a while because every time I talk about it, it sounds like I'm selling something.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm like their heavenly beds were amazing.
I know. I was like, what is he talking about?
In real life, I'm actually trying to get one.
What like, is the I'm bed? Do you know what it is? What's the mattress?
It's called proprietary or registered thing or whatever. So like, it's called a heavenly bed. Like that's their beds in all Westins, not all Marriotts, but all Westins. Like they put this big, I guess there's like all this research that's going behind it. I thought it was just like, you just grabbed a good mattress or whatever, but they literally have like, that's like one of their claims.
That's
fame,
their is this thing.
Bed. So I'm like, sure.
I mean, so, I worked in design for many years and worked with teams that worked on hotel branding, hotel design. And it is like, they got a big box with a bunch of smaller boxes and a bunch of beds in them. And you're like, how do we make this better? Like, how do we differentiate one hotel from another? And years ago, I mean, I've never received a dime from Westin, so I'm not on their payroll. But like, they were like, what if we, you know, serve the needs of, and they're not the first only person to ever come up with that insight. But like, it's fun to see different brands go like, oh, this is a use case, like the needs of athletes, the need people who are thinking about treating their body well while on the road, like is an interesting, I don't think it's wrong to shout them out for like, yeah, because you know how it is. You're like, oh man, how am I going to get a workout in here? Like I want to kind of not come home feeling like trash. I think that's a lot of runners feel like that. And so yeah, they're like,
I guess like Westin is like the first hotel chain to have 24-hour gym.
Oh, interesting.
And like, and then now it's like kind of like commonplace. But one other thing that was like really cool that I thought was maybe just for the marathon, because it's like, you know, marathon weekend, you can get like those gear kits with like the Hyperice massage gun and all that stuff at any time of the year.
Oh, just borrow
any, anywhere. Yeah, in any Westin. Like you can just, like, that's like, it's almost ridiculous.
Because nobody would think to ask for that.
No, like, but I mean, but now that I know that they're there, if I'm staying at
any Westin. So you just go to the concierge and you're like, hey, can I get the runner's package or what?
And then they have, they all have a run concierge too. Like, so you can, if you tell me a runner, you can set it up beforehand and like somebody will, they'll like connect with someone to run with you.
Wow.
They'll like run with you or like at least like give you a good map of like, go this way, don't go that way. You know, I just think it's like awesome because like, you know, the predominant narrative is like, here's where you can get this bourbon and here's where you can get this wine and here's where you can get this. And you're like, all right, enough tequila. Like, I don't need, there's no shortage of alcohol in this establishment. I'm looking to also like have some good experiences. And yeah, I love like that competitive advantage for runners. So shout out to them.
I would love for people in the comments, we'll post the clip from this on Instagram. Please let us know your favorite mattress because I need a new mattress and I'm terrified to buy one because I sleep good in my bed, but I am too embarrassed to tell you how old it is. And I need a new mattress. Okay. So I'd love to know in the comments.
You need a new mattress. You can't like have a Lagoon Sleep pillow.
Like, I know.
Under your head. And then you like, your body is like laying on like a
Jealously looking at your head.
I've got a, my mattress is like very cush. Like it is like way softer than most people would prefer. But I, so anyway, I'm terrified because I'm like, what if my new mattress doesn't match up?
I mean, I know it's a big purchase. It's like hard to make a,
a lot of money,
you know?
And you're like, you don't want to go cheap on a mattress because like that's like half of your life, literally almost.
Yeah. You know? Lindsay sleeps 12 hours a day. Congrats.
She's like, my sleep number is amazing, you know? but yeah, no, it was crazy. And so, yeah, like I super Mizuno and Weston, like I could not have been with two better brands at the right times. Like Mizuno and the people and the culture that they have as a company, I did not expect for it to be as the way that it felt being around them for those days, you know,
in my mind. You in the lab? Were you like, they were like, you showed pictures. Yeah. You were up
like they had all of us. It was like 80 people from all over the world, you know? And then they had us go to the lab and they messaged me like, hey, do you mind doing like the run test for us? I'm like, sure. I thought it was going to be like five people got to try on the thing and run on the treadmill. Like, you know, everybody kind of cycles through whatever, like an influencer trip or whatever. It literally was just my name on the thing. And I was the only one. And I sat there for 10 minutes running back and forth while everybody watched. And it was the strangest thing.
Were you like, when can I finish?
Did they have like the cameras and like the motion sensor? Like
But it was like a strike plate
a
certain distance. And then it was like, it showed like what those shoes do in comparison to other shoes, like with the loading of the ankle and the calf muscle and all this other stuff. And like the angle that you land because of the shoe and all that. But they just had me running back and forth. Like, and the first time it was like, she's like, okay, could you go a little faster next time? So like, I'm like flying back and forth, you know? And it was just a fun experience, honestly, but to be with them and the way that they, like their thing works and they're just the way that they interacted with each other and us as people, as visitors, was so perfect for that moment for me. And then to have run a marathon and like needing recovery to somehow I didn't realize it was going to be that great for recovery, but rolling into that and having like the hyper ice thing. And then they let me borrow the boots and stuff like that. I got a massage and all this other stuff. Like I was like, I was wild VIP. It was
that's perfect awesome
for that second race.
Oh, that's amazing. So what are your, and I probably have to hop off while you guys are still talking, so I'll do that, but carry on. I'll just keep it running. What are your goals going into Boston? I know like time isn't really a big deal, but what's in your head?
I don't know. So like there's a potential I may pace a friend like around like the 320 mark, because I feel like 320 or 315 or something like that is, I wouldn't say equivalent to a 3 hour. Oh, Peter's going to be like, I don't know. But like in Boston, I feel I'm about to talk about Boston. So like, I'm afraid of what I say because you might like, you know,
I mean, yeah,
but I feel like, you know. I feel like if I go at like 320, 315 and pace someone and just kind of take my mind off of myself a little bit.
Yeah.
To run those hills and run through that. I feel like I should be able to snap back enough to have a decent time again in London.
And that's even a less day. That's six days. Not that
less
it's
day, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And international travel in the middle. So like that's something to think about. But this will be what, Boston for you?
This will be number three for me.
Number three. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people speak about the joy of experiencing some of these events in a slightly different way. So, I think there is a lot to be made of the day being supporting a friend, being out there, just like, being in all those moments, the bus, the athlete's village, not consumed by your own, nerves, but like getting to witness.
Yeah.
You'll witness more.
I think it'll be cool. Cause like the first time it was a tough experience because of an injury, and that was terrible. The second time was a great experience cause that's where my PR is. And this time it'll be really cool to be able to be there somewhere in the middle. Like, you know,
yeah,
just having a good time trying to make sure I get through it healthy. All while thinking about recovery a bit. But maybe in London I'll be able to, maybe have a decent 5K, last 5K like I did in Tokyo.
Yeah, I'm sensing some excitement for London. Are you, like, have you thought about that much?
I mean, honestly, like, I'll just try to be as fit as possible going into Boston. you know, with the time that I have. And then maybe just kind of like trying to be as ready for Boston as possible. So maybe I could snap back and like have a decent race for London. I don't think that because I just did the two, I don't know if I could, I wouldn't be able to go after it. I don't think in,
I gotcha, gotcha.
In London.
But it's like I mean, it's a huge event, London Marathon. It's like beautiful. I've attended it many years ago, but I've never run it. You're going to know a million people. And so it's like, you want to have as much juice as you, yeah, as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be nice. That'd be nice to close out the tour. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Any, I'm sure people who, you know, not this, you've run three international marathons. Now you're adding a fourth. Curious, any like tips, tricks, perspective for people? I don't think I've never run a marathon outside the country. So I'm curious, like,
oh, wow,
what you're learning.
I think it's like the try. You could really try your best to get there as soon as possible, you know, before the race, so you can have time to like really acclimate. Because even Berlin was like 8 hours. It's a little easier to kind of get with the program like a couple days in, but you're still really tired. You know, like you just don't, you may feel great, but I think, feel like your body needs like that extra day of, oh, I feel great. You know, mm-hmm, by the time the marathon's there, it's like it's on, you know. So I think it's like take all the things you need with you to try to help your recovery. Plug, stay at a Westin probably, you know. But, you know, just take all the stuff. Like, if you got a foam roller and you can fit in the luggage, take that. If you got a massage gun, do that. You know, if you...
Mm.
It's like recovery and sleep. That's really the thing.
And how did the bagels hang in there?
The bagels are fine. Everybody was worried about the bagels. Everybody's like, well, how are those bagels going to last? And I'm like, the bagels, if I didn't buy them, you know, and as well, let's just play the scenario.
Bagelgate.
If I went to the grocery store and took the bagels that I bought and put them way in the back behind the other bagels, you know, let's just say like people come through, they probably would just now make it to somebody's house, you know.
That's true.
They were great, you know. Like, I didn't just throw them. I didn't take them out the wrapper and toss them in the luggage with the clothes, you know. Like,
that's true.
I left them in
the dying because Megan Featherston was in Tokyo with I think Abbott, and she posted photos of video of all these carbs including bagels. I'm like, see, Tommy could have found some circular carbs, but they're different.
But when I went to Berlin, like I saw bagels, but they had egg in it, and I'm vegan.
Oh,
I was trying not to ruin
all
it.
Right,
you know, so I took some Thomas preserved you know bagels. And they preserved, and they did fine, you know. And I took Pop-Tarts, too. And Pop-Tarts can make it through anything. Pop-Tarts are like the cockroaches of food. Like they.
Yeah, we're going to Mars with those.
Yeah, we got, like, prehistoric Pop-Tarts out here that are still good and fresh.
This is funny how, you know, here on Relay, we try to tell these overarching narratives and stories and emotion, but then we inevitably, like, ground out into the nitty-gritty details.
Yeah, like, start talking about Pop-Tarts. But man, honestly, like I was surprised of, I'm just going to say this, and I'm not saying it like it was easy, but running them back to back like that was easier than I thought it would be.
Okay.
I believed, because I've seen so many people do it, that you could snap back and have a good race. I've seen people even have better races 7 days later than their first race.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But the body can do it. But I thought maybe those people just pushed really hard that second time. Like, they left everything out there, you know? And I still have Boston to think about. So, like, it was like, I just feel like it was much less challenging maybe than I thought. Like, I thought I was going to, in order to get to that, closer to that three, I was going to have, like, some Herculean effort, you know, all the way through the 26. Like, I didn't feel the last marathon until like maybe like 18, 19, 20. You know, and that's when you're getting tired anyway.
That's when you're getting tired. And that's, I mean, I think the fear is always that there's like you're going to break through the floor, that like your quads are going to seize up or something like that. Maybe we're benefiting from like two relatively flat races, like trauma. That's what we're gonna, you know, watch out for in Boston.
Boston, yeah, that's different. Like, yeah, that's why I said like 315, 320.
Yeah, like tiptoeing down those hills.
You're still climbing, but you definitely gotta figure out how to not be like so you know, torn to pieces by like Wednesday. Yeah. You know?
It's the bombing down the hills in Boston that can really catch up to you. So like that'll probably play to your, and then you'll be flat in London. So it's like, okay, burn, baby, burn. Like let's, I just want to see you like hit, you know, that bridge, Big Ben, that whole area and be like, all right, you're still engaged. You're still like ripping along.
Yeah. And that'd be my sixth start too. So
yeah, I forgot about that. Man, yeah. you've been making moves. What were you left with Japanese experience? Anything you want to get back for? Or there's so much in that country I'm sure you saw, but then also so much you didn't see.
No, I think I was saying like I would definitely go back just to be there. I think it was really great. I loved the country in general. I loved the people there. Everything was so nice, so clean. It was almost like it was like being in a different world, you know.
It can be hard to come back. You're like, ooh, yeah, come on.
And then the funniest part was like, I was there for 13 days, and I don't even think I heard anyone. I wouldn't have understood what they said, but you can tell when someone has an attitude. That attitude is universal, you know.
Yeah.
And I swear to you, like the first time I heard like someone else have an attitude with someone else was on the plane. One of the flight attendants like was snippy with the other flight attendant. Like right
now, like,
me and my mom both looked at each other like, whoa.
Because you like, you know? You're saying because you stepped away from that for a full week, like, yeah, just like kindness.
Everybody was just so like, even the people that we knew or from here, everyone's there to have a good time. But even like just being out in like being like an American that doesn't know Japanese, fumbling through like, you know, stores, asking random questions and seeming dumb probably. Like how patient everyone was with us. Like we're like, we might as well have been infants, you know, that like know three words. And everyone was so nice to us. And then no one was like brushed us off. And like, I thought about it. What's the chances that like some two people that don't speak English, like walking into a 7-Eleven, knowing like one word, which is like, means thank you.
Yeah.
I got the high. Like, I didn't even have high.
Konnichiwa.
Yeah, like, I didn't even have that. I've never said that. I didn't say that for 13 days. But all I had was thank you. And, you know, imagine like them coming into, two people coming to like a 7-Eleven like here in the States and like being fully helped with no attitude and like walked through and like even, and the person I was talking to us didn't know English either. They were just like, we're just figuring it out, you know?
You're just like working together, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. But
I mean, that's what I hope marathons can be. You know, you think like tens of thousands of people fly into cities for these big marathons. You know that they're slightly on edge. And then at its best, everyone's like, okay, these people are here for their visitors, their guests, and they are probably on edge because they have a big thing coming up. At its worst, it's like you're somewhere in New York and they're like yelling at you for like, get out of line. And you're like, I just need some carbs.
That's 100% the case. Imagine like people coming from out of the country, like getting ready for the Boston Marathon, and they're just like by themselves in the city trying to figure it out, don't know English. Not to say that people in Boston are, they literally call themselves massholes, bro. They're not gonna be that nice, you know.
Yeah, they try to turn up the dial a little bit. Yeah, we're gonna give them like a, we're gonna be optimistic about like the marathon weekend. People can.
Marathon weekend, everyone's welcome.
Yeah, but it's tough.
But yeah, I think Osaka, like if the vegan food was a little bit, if there was more vegan options for me, I would stay there for like, I'm sure that if I stayed there longer, I would have found out all the places. But
yeah,
I would definitely stay there for months on it. Like it was so nice to me. Like I loved the vibe. It was so quiet.
So is it a large, I don't know anything about the city.
Osaka's like, I don't know if it's large, but it's definitely not small. Like, I guess they were saying the metro area, the metro Osaka area. So, like, Osaka, like, proper, and then, like, the cities around that they consider metro Osaka collectively have 19 million people.
And that's big enough.
That's smaller than Tokyo. Like, in this weird small-town vibe, but it had large buildings everywhere, you know, like if you come to like Chicago, like the largest buildings are in a smaller, not small, like Chicago's big, but it's like it's small in comparison to like the how sprawling the buildings are in Osaka, but it still feels like small town stuff for some reason.
Yeah, okay, Tokyo, because you're not in the biggest.
Yeah, Tokyo is much brighter, very New York-ish when it comes to that. Subways are so, everything was just so clean over there. We saw maybe two pieces of trash on the ground the whole the time we were there.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how different it is.
I mean, it's just the culture of like, I went to a ramen restaurant when I was there for work, and then I think they had like little toothpicks. Did I tell the story? And then I was just like, had a toothpick in my mouth, and we walk out, and my boss, he was based in Japan, was like, yeah, the whole like toothpick in the mouth, walking down the street, that's like not a thing here. Like, and yeah, I was like, oh, I mean, I had forgotten that it was even in my mouth, but they were just like, just culturally, they're, you know, not like scarfing down or.
And like the one thing that was like just so crazy to me was like how people would be waiting in line to get on like the subway or something, like on a train or something, but then people just kind of naturally fall into these lines,
mm-hmm,
like almost single file. Like, you know, it's like, wait, like you guys, there's no one just instructing people to like be patient and like nice to each other.
No.
Everybody just gets in line. And then like when you go up and down the escalator, they all stand to the left side of it. If you're not going to move, if you're not going to walk up the escalator, you just stand to the left automatic. So you can walk up the escalator or down the escalator if you want to.
I know.
Just automatic. There is no excuse me. It's just like you do it. And there's no line that says walk, run, you know, like stand, walk. It just happens. And it's just, really weird.
When I speak about Japanese culture, I like fear that I fall into like glorifying and like othering, because I'm just like so in awe. I'm just like, but it just seems to like,
yeah. And I was saying to somebody, like, I'm sure like if you ask somebody that lives there, they're like, oh, I hate this and that. Like, I mean, we all have our thing, obviously.
The nuances just, they see that we don't see.
Yeah, like I'm sure that there's like a freedom thing that's different, you know.
Yeah.
Something.
Any better, wait, this is a total non sequitur, but did you get to any shops that you enjoyed? I just remember like the like there was just so many sneaker stores and like all sorts of crazy stuff that I was like, damn, like check that out.
I was like, I mean, we stayed in Tokyo area. There was some really cool shops, like, you know, like the high end, but we were like in the little high end area.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like you saw like Bathing Ape and like, you know, like I didn't even know like this cologne was, I thought they only had cologne, but like this company like called Isimiyaki or something like that, that, you know, that cologne, like they have like a full store. Like I just didn't realize like Chanel was like next door. Like it was a cool little area, and of course I have no business in any of those shops other than just to like take a video so I can like show it on the gram later.
You're like, this is what I'm about.
I do wish that I was had a little more time to explore, maybe after the marathon. And then maybe even like, you know, maybe $600,000-$700,000 more in the bank.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, well, it's like that thing where you're like, you're looking at the numbers going like, how many digits do I take off?
Yeah.
Can I take six off? And they're like, you take four. And you're like, damn, that's going to be.
Oh, wow. This is still really expensive.
Yeah. You're like, you do the conversion, then you try to do it again. And they're like, no, you only get to do it once.
And you go to the grocery store and you buy up all this stuff and you swear, like, I mean, here, we went to the grocery store and for sure here a couple times it would have been like $40, $50.
Yeah.
You're like walking out with 17 American. Like, it's like, wait, what?
You're like, what?
Like, they don't, like, certain things cost about the same, but then certain things really don't. Like, it's like, wow, this is really cheap. Like, food is so much cheaper there.
It's just wild. Yeah. It makes you, I mean, that's why travels.
If you go to a good ramen place now, you know, here, two people eating like a good ramen, it's like, what, $30-something, right?
Yeah.
It was absolutely.
Like
$19 or $20 American.
Do you get the tickets? Like where you like order, I'm trying to remember, you like order in a machine and get a ticket.
Yeah. And then you sit down. And that's cool too. Like, I mean,
yeah.
I think you're starting to see more of that here now too. After like COVID, because people were like, you know, like, how do we
new systems,
sort of staff, new system, less touch, all that. But like, they've been doing it for a minute, and it makes sense.
Totally. Oh man, I did not.
I was in the future, bro. I was in the future.
Yeah, tell us about it. This is cool. Yeah, I mean, we're gonna have to get a comparison, a rundown once you hit up London, because those are very different cultures, and I think that is the beauty of the. Like 6-star medal and that whole journey is having actually I haven't done any of these. And Marcus was talking about it on our group chat on Monday, like the experience of running a marathon in Japan and Berlin and London, just like so very different from each other. The American ones, a little different, but yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what the difference is.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. Well, cool, man. I just like, I couldn't wait to hear more about it, and I'm sure you'll have more stories to come. But yeah, we just wanted to hop on, and I know that we've been hyping it up so much that we wanted to pay off for relay members that, you know, we're here all about the journey.
I'm alive. Yeah, I'm alive.
Yeah.
And I do, I appreciate you for like, for noticing my last 5K in Tokyo, because you can see like almost where I realized that maybe
I could be close
to three again. So, but the way that I ran it was the 10-10-10 method from like,
oh yeah, you were talking about that.
Yeah. And it worked. I've never felt as like alert and aware and as with it as I did both of those races at mile 22.
That's awesome.
Never had that experience of just being like so there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able like to turn it up, and I knew I didn't have to run a race in it 7 days later, so I was able to kind of turn it up at the end.
I mean, yeah, that's the beauty. Wait, for those who maybe missed it on your stories, high level the 10-10-10 method, because I think it's interesting.
High level is like Jeff, don't kill me because like, I don't know the exact numbers, but you work the math out where your first 10 miles is like, I think he said like 7 to 8 seconds slower than your marathon goal pace, all 10.
Okay.
Like you try your best to stick to that, you know, no matter what. And then the next 10, so 11 through 20, whatever, you run those at goal pace, I believe. And then the next 10K, you pretty much just progressively race depending on how you did the other 20. And then, and if you do it right, if you hit all the splits just spot on, you'll run exactly your number that you're looking for.
Huh.
You know, like you can, but then if you pick it up at the end even more and more, if you have more energy, then you can go lower than your number. It doesn't really provide for like blow away days where you just like 5 minutes under your PR. But
it's
one of those things where like if you want to break three for the first time, you know, break four or break five, here's like a really safe way to go about doing that, especially if you're just like, I just want to run 59:30. You know what I'm
saying? Yeah.
You could definitely do it. And it was.
And this is.
You're passing people.
Oh, for sure.
From 0 to 10, you're running with, because you're running at a consistent pace, so you're running with people. But from 10 until 26, you are literally passing people the whole time.
That's wild.
Like, just think about it. Like, once you change your pacing,
you're
never running with anybody else.
I mean, this is from Jeff Dengate from Runner's World, correct? And majority of...
the book or the magazine or something.
Yeah. And then maybe they have. It's like speaking to the averages, very few... It's the minority of marathoners who pace well enough, patiently enough, that they're able to pick it up throughout. The majority of us are not like designed to thrive past 20 miles. Like very few people train into that zone very often. And so it's just, it's saying, I'm highlighting it because it seems to have worked for you in the zone you were running in. And the people I'm coaching for Boston, I'm really trying to sell them on, all these hills have names. Like there's all the hills with the Newton Hills and the Heartbreak Hill. But like after that, you have 5 miles to party on. And if you have saved something to party with, like going to be a better experience. So I think too many of us like mortgage the whole day to be like, no, maybe I'll catch a flyer. It's like being at the craps table or something and be like, I could roll snake eyes 6 times in a row for those final 10K. And it's like, no, like give yourself a shot to feel good.
And honestly, like I feel like this would be a great way to, it would be a great way to run Boston because that first like 6 or 5 miles or so, it almost seems like it's impossible to not be bombing down them, you know? So like if you're like, we're not doing this based on effort. We're doing this on pace. Here's the pace we're running for these first 10 miles, no matter what happens. And then here's the pace we're running at through almost the heartbreak. And I should have banked so much energy that I really can take advantage of the downhill leading, you know, going home. because honestly, I ran last year fairly well, I thought. And I got to the top of Heartbreak Hill and I was like, here we go. You know, I felt like I did it right, but I really did use a lot more energy, I think, than I thought. I felt aware and ready to go, but I kind of just expected it to be easy after that. Those last 5 miles ain't easy.
Never easy.
Like, it is downhill.
Oh,
it's not as easy. It's not as easy.
No one. No. Go check the fine print. No one said easy.
I thought it was like, oh, after you get to, I was like, after you get over Heartbreak, it's just downhill from there. Like, you know,
smooth sailing.
Smooth sailing. It is not. Like, you have to either, I feel like you have to be either ready to race or hold, or just hold on for dear life.
Yeah. And like you're fighting in your, I mean, I have like a trick question I almost ask athletes, like, oh, what did your watch say, you know, in those final miles? And they're like telling me, and I'm like, trick question. Stop looking at your watch. Like look at the person ahead of you. Look at the fans. Look at anything. Just like, don't look at your watch. Like your watch, I would love nothing more than just like take it off your wrist and chuck it to the side when the racing starts.
Like a Kiptum Sarah Hall moment.
Just exactly. Like, exactly. You
know, like, because honestly, like in the funny part was I didn't look at my watch too much in Osaka or Tokyo at the end, but number one in Osaka because it was mentally I just wasn't all the way there, so I just like I didn't even look. But then in Tokyo I was like, just don't look because you're holding on to this line. I thought honestly, I look back, I thought I was going maybe 6:30, 6:25, 6:30. For all three of those miles at the end.
Yeah.
And then I looked back and was like, oh, you were at 6. I was like 6:20, 6:19, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it, but.
And.
It's kind of a trick because you're like, the effort seems to be greater. It's weird. You know, like you're
going faster than
you think, but it's hard. You know, like it's a weird balance and you'll tell yourself to slow down.
My biggest fear for people is that you get all the way to like that part of the race and through the training block and into the race, you haven't actually lived without your watch at any point. You know, you haven't just like been in the moment pushing. And like you're saying, if you'd been like, man, I bet this is a 6:30 and you look down, it's a 6:22. Maybe you slow down. Like, don't slow down. Like it's going well. Like it was naturally. I thought that was wonderful.
Or if you're like, man, this 6:30 is tough. And you look down and it's 6:40.
Yeah.
And then it's like, then the wheels really can start falling off, you know?
Like, then it's discouraging.
Like, wow, this is harder than it's supposed to be. I think I got 3 more miles left or 2 more miles left. I can't do it.
Totally.
Just plug in, especially if you run it well. Just watch all the backs that you're catching up to passing. You know,
that's what's so cool. I mean, that's where what's wild is how much you're able to learn about the marathon, even when you're not just only going at 100%.
I passed. I'm not trying to brag against you. But like I passed 300 people in the last 2K.
Whoa, that's almost like hectic.
Yeah, it's like you're just like.
You're like. Awesome. Well, you'll be able to carry that. Maybe also like help your friend in Boston like find a line, you know, like navigate, and then you'll carry that through to London. So we can't wait to hear more about it and to have you back for a few weeks on group chat. We missed you.
Why did you tell me that? I was like.
No, it was great. We had like
Halo.
Yeah, the light shining down on Tommy. Yeah. We're looking forward to having you back and we'll go from here.
All right, man. Thanks.